You're listening to Little Green Cheese, episode 100. Well, welcome back, curd nerds. I'm Gavin Weber, and this podcast is where you can learn about cheese making at home. Big episode. I'm very excited. 100, that's 10 years in the making. I recorded episode 1 back in 2013. That just seems like so long ago. goodness me. First of all, what I'd like to do is to play some voicemails for you from fans of the show who have enjoyed not only this podcast, but the videos on my main channel. So let me just play this. It runs for about 4 minutes, and it's really encouraging.
G'day, curd nerd. This is Jim.
And Shauna.
We just wanted to say congratulations on your 100th episode. And thanks for all the tips with making cheese. All right, good on ya.
Hello, my name is Jonathan. I live in Virginia, which is the United States, obviously. I just want to tell you that I just came across your channel, and I'm about three YouTube videos into it, and I absolutely love this. I don't know why. I've always been interested in how to make cheese. I've been making a lot of jerky and everything. A lot of time-consuming products, whatever, just to hand to friends, whatever else. I think this is probably been my next venture, so definitely looking forward to future videos and everything, and I appreciate everything you do. Thank you. Bye.
Mate, I've just watched your video. I've gone down, bought the milk. I've just made my first halloumi. You're a legend. Thank you so much for the video. That's why I'm taking time to do this. Thanks, buddy. Grant, Tamora.
Hi, Gavin. It's Patricia Gauchi in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. I wanted to extend my congratulations to you for 100 episodes of your podcast and to thank you so sincerely for being such an inspiration to home cheesemakers all over the globe. Truly, you've made it easy for us to just tune into you, listen to what you have to say, follow your instructions. You're always so clear, you're always so calm, you're always so inspiring, and I have to say, I wouldn't be half the cheesemaker I am now if it weren't for you. Congratulations, please keep up the good work, and I look forward to talking to you again on Ask the Cheeseman. Bye for now.
Hey, Gavin. This is Gavin, and I think this is a really cool idea. I've had to move a couple different times in the last few years, maybe between three different states, and having somebody to watch on YouTube is kind of nice. I guess in a way it doesn't change. Don't know what I'm trying to say, but maybe it's somewhere in the middle of things that the rest of entertainment hasn't quite caught up with yet. So anyway, I do pop in and watch your videos, even if I don't watch them all. And everybody's got a thing. I guess yours is cheese. I would be a novice, of course, but it's good to know those videos are out there if you ever wanted to figure out how to do something. And I do learn a lot from YouTube. So keep on doing what you're doing.
G'day, Gavin. All the best. Congratulations. Love what you're doing. Watch it all the time. Thanks.
Congratulations, Gavin. Tamara Geiser here from Piedmont MRF Nubians, Piedmont, Ohio, USA. 100 episodes. That's such a great accomplishment. My husband and I really enjoy your videos and podcasts. We've learned so much from you. Keep up the great work. We look forward to more education on the art of cheesemaking.
Good day, Gavin. This is Ben from New Zealand. I'm a German living here, and I just want to congratulate you for your milestone of 100 episodes. Great work, great podcast, great YouTube channel. You've certainly changed my life and my hobbies, and I thank you very, very much for all your hard work and thinking and planning and videotaping and all the editing and everything that goes into it. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hey Gavin, it's Jason Wright over on YouTube here. I'm that guy that's deathly allergic to all of the psylliums. So like no blue cheese for me ever. But I do gotta say, I have always enjoyed watching you make, especially your famous blues that you do. But even some of those more exotic ones that I probably couldn't partake in, but they're I guess just so exotic, so rare, and you kind of have to know, one must know how to make these things in the fashion such as yourself. So huge, huge kudos to you and your wife, and tons of love for everything you do. It's very informative, very educational as a French trained professional chef who's now retired and switched fields into politics. I just gotta say, wow, you are one of the few people who has been able to teach me some new tricks in the kitchen, post French training. So what you do is seriously a good service. Thank you very much, and stay safe over there. Much love to you all.
Congratulations, cheese man.
There you go. Thank you so much to everybody who left a message. Not only a voicemail, but over on the community announcement, I did a community announcement on the main channel and said that I was going to be recording the 100th podcast episode this week. And the encouragement in the comments section was just fantastic. Thank you so much to everybody who left a voicemail and a comment on that video. It makes me humble that I have touched so many people throughout the world, and they all have learnt to make cheese because of the stuff that I do. So very humbling for this old Australian bloke. Anyway, I thought I'd share with you, I have brought to the party a cheese platter. What I have here is some sour mizithra. I have some robbiola. I have some buffalo mozzarella, and I've got some Stilton left over. So I'm going to be having that as my supper during the show. You may catch me eating some, but they're all cheeses that I've made recently, and some of them haven't been released yet. The robbiola certainly hasn't, but all the rest do have video tutorials available on the Gavin Weber channel. What I thought I'd talk about this episode is how I got to where I am now, being a cheese making, home cheese making educator, I suppose, for want of a better word. It all started way back when I was a young lad in the 1970s. I grew up on a dairy farm. This dairy farm was located in Loxton North in South Australia. Yeah, if you want to learn a little bit more about that dairy farm, go and have a listen to episode 23 of the podcast. And it's where I interview my father, who was the dairy farmer. I was just a young lad. And we talk about all things dairy and why we didn't make cheese on the dairy farm. One of the reasons why mum and dad and us kids never made any cheese was because A, we didn't know how to. It wasn't passed down from generation to generation. We didn't have any starter cultures or rennet or knowledge on how to obtain rennet, even though it was probably there right in front of us every time we slaughtered a calf for veal. The fourth stomach is known as the rennet bag, and is perfect for making cheese. But we didn't know that. We didn't have that knowledge. And it wasn't until I went and visited my friend George Polymiatis. He invited me over for lunch to his place. And his dad was from Greece. I'm not sure where. But his dad and his mum invited me to stay for lunch as a young lad. I must have been about 13, maybe 12 or 13. And I distinctly remember the flavours of the food, specifically feta. I'd never had feta before as a young lad. I'd never had real Greek yogurt. And that feta, just the flavour, I can still taste it in my mouth today, in my mind's eye. And it was one of the best cheeses I'd ever had up until that stage of my life, being a young 12 or 13-year-old. Reason being is because the only cheese we ever had at home was this stuff from Kraft. It was processed cheddar or cheddar cheese. It wasn't really cheddar. It was just a processed cheese that actually was wrapped in silver foil or aluminium foil and in a blue cardboard box. I remember that distinctly. And it actually used to not be in the fridge. It used to be in the pantry. So this processed cheese never went off. And Dad used to call it soap suds cheese. It was hilarious. So that's why I'd never actually tasted a real cheese in my life until I went to George's place and had some feta. And my goodness, it was amazing. So I remember it to this day. Now, move on many, many years. I had visited Europe during a holiday and tasted some amazing European cheeses. But still, I wasn't really a home cheesemaker until I bit the bullet in, I think it was 2009, where I decided I wanted to start eating foods that were within 100 miles or 160 kilometres of where I lived. And at the time, there wasn't any cheese artisan cheesemakers in that vicinity, none that I knew of anyway. So I decided to go to a local community centre and they were holding a course on how to make cheese. So I learnt from these two lovely old ladies, Dorothy and Lorraine, who had this travelling cheesemaking business / education thing, and they went to local community centres around Victoria and taught people how to make cheese. So the very first cheese I chose to make was feta. Now, unfortunately, it didn't taste like the feta that I remembered back when I went to George's place as a 12-year-old, but it was something like feta. It was more like a white cheese in brine. It was kind of tortured during the cheesemaking class because as a press, what they had was a car jack. So one of those scissor car jacks, and they actually pressed the cheese there and then and lost most of the milk fat and really didn't treat the cheese with too much respect, which is, you know, what can you do? Because they had to get through, there was 8 students there and had to press all their cheeses all at once and all that sort of stuff. But one thing I did do was I picked up some supplies, so some rennet, some calcium chloride, some starter cultures, so a mesophilic and a thermophilic starter culture, and that's all I had to start with. So those 4 ingredients was what started me on my cheesemaking journey. So I went home and I brined the feta properly. It got slimy because I didn't know about balancing a pH of the brine. So it was a little bit ordinary. But we ate it. It was nice. Kim enjoyed it as well and was very surprised that I actually made some cheese. During the course, they also gave us a little booklet with some recipes in it. And one of the very first cheeses I decided to make was Wensleydale with sage because, you know, I was big into Wallace and Gromit and all that sort of stuff. So Wensleydale with sage, we had sage growing in the garden, so I picked some. I dehydrated that in the oven to destroy any pathogens that were on it, after having washed it, of course. So I had some of this dried sage, which was absolutely beautiful, smelt fantastic. I made a Wensley, darling. My biggest mistake was I started at about 10 a.m. and the Wensleydale process just goes forever. I remember at about 1 in the morning, the cheese had finished its third pressing or something like that. So from 10 a.m. until 1 in the morning the next day, I was making this Wensleydale. And I tell you what, I was absolutely dog-tired by the time I'd finished. That was my very first real cheese. And we matured it for about 3 months. It was the middle of winter, so I waxed the cheese and I put it into our pantry, which was about 13 degrees Celsius. I had a thermometer in there. So there was no artificial cooling or anything like that. I didn't know what a cheese cave or anything like that was. And we matured the Wensleydale for 3 months during winter. We cracked it open and my goodness, it was the best cheese that I had had in a long, long time. The Wensleydale was just truly exceptional. And you can actually find that, not that video, but one I made subsequently after. There is a Wensleydale with Sage video very, very early in the back catalogue, probably about 2010 on the Gavin Weber channel, the main channel. So that was the very first cheese, real cheese, not counting the feta that I'd taught or learnt in the class, but it was the very first cheese that I had decided to make myself, and it was amazing. So since that day, back in 2009, I was absolutely hooked on making cheese, and I probably made cheese every weekend without filming it or anything like that for about 2.5 years. So 2.5 years later, I decided to do my first YouTube video on the channel. It wasn't specifically a cheesemaking channel at the time. It still had the name Gavin Weber, but it was about sustainable living and living within your means and living locally and that sort of stuff. And soon as I put the first cheesemaking video up, the numbers on the channel, the views and the comments and all that sort of stuff kind of went crazy. And I thought, well, maybe there's something in this cheesemaking video education niche. And so I decided then to exclusively stick to making cheesemaking videos, except there's actually one video on the channel that's still there from the good old days, and that was how I made my clay cob oven that we have out in the back that we flash up a couple of times a year to make pizzas in. But that video is still on there. So all the other videos I got rid of, made sure there was no copyright strikes on the videos that I had. And the rest is history. I just kept making video after video after video. And eventually I got to about 10,000 subscribers on the channel. And YouTube themselves reached out to me and invited me to this Creator Lab with a whole bunch of other Australian YouTubers. And they taught me the process of running a successful YouTube channel, which was really good. It was all about frequency. It was about, the thumbnail. It was about different types of content. So hero content, which is like the tutorials, and other sorts of content like taste tests and things like that that aren't the main, the main video type. Anyway, so I learned that, and then I kept posting once a week continuously until the cheddar video, so where I did the cloth-bound cheddar. So the channel was slowly ticking, ticking, ticking away. And then all of a sudden I released the cheddar, the cloth-bound cheddar video, and the channel went crazy. I think I gained about 50,000 subscribers in 3 or 4 days. It was just absolutely crazy. And it was around that time when, I was actually had transitioned from not just home cheesemaker, but I had started to teach physical classes on quick mozzarella, how to make queso blanco, how to make paneer, some very basic cheeses that you could fit into a 5-hour course. I actually replaced the two ladies who had taught me, who had retired. I replaced them at the same community centre that I was taught how to make cheese at. So it kind of went full circle. It was really exciting. And I taught about 10 or 15 classes, I can't remember, until the until our e-commerce business, which we kind of started about the same time as the workshops, the cheese-making workshops. We started that and we started selling cheese-making supplies, first of all, and we actually made our own soap at home as well using the cold process method. And we did a course on that as well and started teaching that at the community center, me and Kim. And we also made our own bath bombs. So we taught a bath bomb course and candle making course. And anyway, so and there, that's when Little Green Workshops was kind of born, because at the end of each class, people would say to us, this was for the first few months, where do I get this stuff so I can make more? And Kim and I looked at each other and said, I think it's time to open up an e-commerce store so people can order from us. And from there, you know, year on year, we've increased our offerings, our product offerings, and our revenue has grown at a steady rate. It's not so good at the moment because of the cost of living crisis here in Australia, but we're getting by, so that's okay. And it kind of gives me a little bit more time to record podcast episodes and make more cheese and that sort of stuff to work on the other side of the business, which I really enjoy doing, as you can tell. So that is kind of my journey. You know, how many episodes, how many videos? Well, we've done 100 podcast episodes. I'm just going to have a look at how many videos I've actually released on the main channel. What does it say? Let's have a look. Will it let me? Yeah, so it's right. 776 videos I have produced on the main Gavin Weber channel since I began uploading. Well, the channel was created in February 2029, but the first video was released in, it was in March. Let me just have a quick look. Oldest video. There it is. 14 years ago. My goodness. And that was just a scan around the kitchen with me prepping the cheese making area. The first real cheese that I released on the channel was 12 years ago, and that was Kefili cheese. And it had to be in three parts because at the time, YouTube would only let you have a video go for 10 minutes. So I had to split it into three parts. And then my Parmesan video kind of went off like a frog in a sock as well. And I kept on making videos and more, and eventually it got to Wensleydale, which I showed everybody how to make. Anyway, it was really good fun, and I was kind of bitten by the education bug as well as loving to make cheese and eating cheese, you know, hence the little cheese platter that I've got here. I kind of need to take a breath to have some in a minute. Anyway, so that was my journey, and it still continues this day. I'm proud to say that I'm 58 years old. I started the journey, like I said, in 2009. So I was about 40 something. So, you know, I've made so many cheeses, so many cheese making videos, and now 100 podcast episodes. It's just been so much fun, and I really enjoyed the journey, and I hope you have too. If you have, let me know in the comments or leave me a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. So it's time for some news. Now, I dug up the latest news story, which is pretty good. Let me just, before we do, we've got to play the news theme, don't we? So the news that we have here is from the Yorkshire Post, or Yorkshire Post. It says the oldest known book about British cheese is acquired by the University of Leeds. And here it is here. It's called A Pamphlet Compiled of Cheese Containing the Differences, Nature, Quality and Goodness of the Same. So the pamphlet, it's a 16th century manuscript. And it's the earliest known book about cheesemaking in Britain, and it's recently been acquired by the University of Leeds Special Collections. It's a 112-page vellum-bound pamphlet, and the author is unknown, and it is thought to be unpublished. It was written around 1580. So, some information on it said food historian Peter Breers says that the manuscript script is probably the first comprehensive academic study of a single foodstuff to be written in the English language. He added, "I've really never seen anything like it." It says, Jay Rayner, a University of Leeds alumni, says it is thrilling to see this rare document added to the library's collection, taking us right back to the origins of cheesemaking in the United Kingdom, and in itself part of the very weft and weave of our food culture. The book opens with a Greek philosopher's definition of cheese, which is milk coagulated. And it goes on to discuss curds and whey, the many different kinds of cheese and their merits. Thoughts on virtues of cheese as a medicine have dated less well, with theories outlining effects of cheese on people of different temperaments. Anyway, so it goes on to say that it's amazing in the collection. It says it can now be read online. Oh, okay. So Musad Kohar, keeper of the Brotherton collection, said that with an unbroken history of cheesemaking in Yorkshire dating back to medieval monks and beyond, it feels apt that the university has been able to give it a home. It can now be read online. All right, so I'll have to go and check that out and see what sort of wisdom is in the oldest written book on cheesemaking. So, very, very interesting. Or should I say cheesemaking in Britain. So there's the news. So it wouldn't be a Little Green Cheese podcast episode without some questions. So the questions that we have today are as follows. Here's question number one.
Hi, Gavin. I am getting ready to make my first cheese, and my husband likes very, very hot cheese, and I'm planning on using some scorpions. Do I need to dehydrate these first and then put them in like a coffee, something to chop them up fine and put them in ground up, or do they go in wet?
Oh, you caught me eating cheese. Thank you, Kathy, for that question. Oh, sorry about that. Scorpions in your cheese. Well, I think the first thing you would have to do is catch a few of the little blighters first, because they do run around fast, and it depends on if you live in the desert or not. You would have to make sure that you remove the tail because that has venom in it. You really don't want that in your cheese. And you're going to have to pull the legs off, unfortunately, poor little thing. But other than that, maybe the pincers too. They might be a bit nippy. But all jokes aside, I think you're talking about scorpion chilies. Well, yes, you would have to dehydrate them. And then what I would do is once they're dehydrated, then grind them up into a coarse grind. So they're like chili flakes. And then Basically, put them into about half a cup of water and simmer the chilies, keeping the chili water and straining out the chilies itself. And then have a look at, I have a recipe specific on a chili, I think it's a jalapeno. Let's have a look. I've done triple pepper jack with chilies. I've done a jalapeno cheddar. Go and check that out on the main channel, and that'll give you some guidance as to how to treat the chilies and how to incorporate them into your cheese. Thanks for your question. On to question number two.
Hi, Gavin. It's Jim from London. Just to let you know that I think all your videos are great. You've been an inspiration to me. Recently, I made some camemberts. I matured them for 4 weeks at around 9 or 10 degrees, 85% RH. They came out, they tasted fantastic. However, the outside just under the rind was quite runny, although really tasty still. I'm just wondering if maybe a lower temperature or whether I'd let them ripen too long. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. That'd be great. So keep up the good work, and I hope to hear from you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Jim. Appreciate the question. So the best way to mature your camembert so it doesn't get skin slip and runny just underneath the rind. So at 10 days, when the camemberts have a full coating of white mold, wrap them in cheese wrap, okay? Take them out of the maturation area at 9 to 10 degrees Celsius, or even up until 13 you could do, which is 55 Fahrenheit. But take the wrapped cheeses and put them into the kitchen fridge. So put them in back in their ripening box, but in their micro-perforated wrap, and put them in the kitchen fridge down at 4 degrees Celsius. That way you're slowing down the proteolysis, which is the breakdown of the proteins from long-chain proteins down to short-chain proteins or short-chain fatty acids. So they will then mature evenly all the way through the cheese. It'll mature outside in, and eventually by about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks at 4 degrees Celsius or 39 Fahrenheit, you'll find the cheeses will be soft to press into, and that way your cheeses won't be runny just on the surface. They'll be mature all the way through. So usually you make a batch of four, so test with one of the cheeses. You'll have to cut a wedge out of it to check, and you won't be able to mature that one any further. But check it and then have some, of course, eat it, yummy. And then from the firmness or gooiness of that one, then you can determine whether the other three need a little bit longer aging or they're all ready for consumption now. So that's how you do it. Initial 10 days until the white mold grows at the higher temperature of between 10 to 13 Celsius, and then wrap them and then put them into a cooler area. The kitchen fridge is fine at 4 degrees or 39 Fahrenheit, and they will mature slower and be less runnier under the surface. So I hope that helps. Next question, number three.
Hi, Gavin. My name's Tony Hammond. I'm from the UK. I live in the East Yorkshire in the north of England area. So hi there. I've been following some of your podcasts and I've looked at some of your videos with interest. I've never made cheese. I must confess, I'm a brand new first starter beginner, never even tried. I'm a pretty good cook, so I think I want to use some of those skills. And I'm heading towards retirement in a couple of years, and I'm thinking, what can I do to keep myself occupied? I love cheese, I love cooking, so Voila, there we go. The key question for me, for you, is really about the only thing I may have difficulty with is storage, because I read and I saw that you have to store your cheese at certain temperatures and at certain humidity. I live in a relatively small property. I've only got a bungalow and I've got an outside shed. But in British summer, it does get quite humid in there. It's actually quite warm. So I'm wondering how I can overcome the storage problem. I am looking at making 1 kilos of cheese. I'm going to start with the cheddar, I think. So I actually saw you on a YouTube video, actually, I was interested in the press that you had made from a friend. So I think I'm probably going to do the same. So I can make myself a press. I'm pretty handy. So if you could give me some advice on storage, I'd be really interested on how I overcome the storage problem. And I'll be keeping in touch, and I'll probably be looking at some of your products as well too. So thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Well, thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. I wrote a blog post specifically about how to mature your cheese, and that's over at Little Green Cheese, which is my cheese making blog. The title of the post is How to Make a Cheese Fridge. So a cheese fridge is basically a dorm fridge or a bar fridge, whatever you want to call it, one that just fits under the kitchen counter. It's a small little thing. Usually it has a freezer in it as well, a freezer compartment. But what I did to modify mine was to add an external thermostat. So I specifically use the Inkbird, what's it called, Wi-Fi ITC308, which is the Australian version. There are UK versions, US versions for the different power voltage options and plugs. So it has a heating and a cooling thing, because you can use it to heat things like brewing mats. But definitely I use it in the cooling mode for cheese fridge. So I plug my cheese fridge into this. I've got the probe, the thermometer, the thermostat probe, in through the seal of the door, and I've got it strung to the to one of the shelves, just tied in a knot, and that controls. I've got it set at 13 degrees Celsius, and it turns the fridge on and off when it gets to that temperature. So there's no issue whatsoever with that, and we don't have too many troubles. That's for sure. It's really easy to control the temperature. Now, as for the humidity, what I do there is usually I will either vacuum pack the cheese, and you don't have to worry about the humidity at all, or I'll wax the cheese, and you still really don't have to worry about the humidity in the cheese fridge. However, if you do have cheeses that are mold ripened, like blue cheeses, white mold cheeses, washed rind cheeses, they all need the humidity controlled so that those molds will grow. I use what's known as a ripening box. So I'll use a ripening box that will have a damp cloth in the bottom under the plastic mat, and I'll put the cheeses on the plastic mat, and usually the humidity stays between about 85 to 95% relative humidity for as long as that cloth underneath the mat stays damp. Because the cheeses are usually still draining a little bit, some of the whey soaks into that cloth, and the cheese itself has no problems maintaining its humidity. Just remember, because they're enclosed and the molds need oxygen to grow, you will need to turn your cheeses at least in the first week a couple of times, and then don't forget to turn the cheeses weekly as they're maturing. So that's how I get around it, and that's how I've made my cheese cave, as I call it. It's really a converted dorm fridge or bar fridge for cheese making maturation. Easy peasy. And I'll leave the link to that blog post, which has Amazon affiliate links to the Inkbird thermostat, down in the description and the show notes. Well, thanks for your question. Question number four.
Morning, Gavin. It's Mike Price here in Jersey in the Channel Islands. Thanks for all your hard work on the cheese-making front. It's been absolutely wonderful. I made some farmhouse cheddar blue recently, and it has now got blue mold all over the outside of it, not entirely covering it, but certainly all over the cheese. And I'm thinking about waxing it. Do I need to remove the blue mold before I wax it, or can I just wax it as it is? Appreciate your help. Thanks very much.
Good question, Mike. Thanks for that. With the farmhouse cheddar blue that I made, I remember specifically in the video that I just kept it in the ripening box. And yes, it did get a coating of blue, but the rind was fairly dry, even though I did keep the humidity up a little bit in there. It'll have a nice coating of blue. And I let it mature out to the 3 months, I think it was, or 90 days. And basically, I just got a dry cloth. And because the rind was fairly dry, I just wiped the blue mold or the spores that were growing on the outside of the cheese. I just wiped them off until it was clean with a dry cloth and just continued that way. The mold did grow back a little bit, but because the rind was fairly dry and the humidity was down to about 80%, the mold didn't grow too prolific on the farmhouse cheddar blue. And that way I could get away with not coating it in wax or vacuum packing it, because I still wanted the oxygen to be able to reach the inside of the cheese and allow the Penicillium Roque 40 to keep growing and growing through those veins. It was an amazing looking cheese. I was certainly very impressed with it, and I hope that it all worked out okay for you. So that's my advice on keeping the blue on the farmhouse cheddar blue. So that's the 100th episode of the podcast. It's gone a lot longer than it normally does, but thank you so much for listening over all of these years. I know the show's been on and off. I kind of do it in seasons, but now I'm going to keep going every week and releasing an episode to you. Also, for those who watch on YouTube, thanks for watching. I have how many subscribers over there? Goodness me. It is a few. if I can find it, here we are. There it is. So there are 886 subscribers over on YouTube. Over there, the channel's called Little Green Cheese Podcast with Gavin Weber, and you can go and check that out. And there are video versions of the podcast. You can obviously just play it in the background. It's up to you. But I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers and to 4,000 watch hours on that channel so I can monetize it and make a little bit of money on the side for this hobby and not have to introduce sponsors other than obviously Little Green Workshops, which is the company that Kim and I run to bring you all the cheese making supplies that we ship all throughout the world. So if you listen on the audio only version, if I could ask a favor of you, if you could pop over to the YouTube channel for the podcast. Like I said, it's called Little Green Cheese Podcast. Just go and search on YouTube, you'll find it. And subscribe to the channel and ring that little notification bell and you'll get notified when every episode comes in. The good thing is, like I said, you can just listen to it in the background as you would your normal audio podcast. Or if you choose to, just listen to the audio-only version. I have no issues with that whatsoever. But if you do, can I ask another favour? And that is, on iTunes, if you listen on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, please leave a review and a rating. That would really help it get up higher in the charts And I may even get on the front page of the Apple podcasts. I don't know how many people look at that, but anyway, it would be fantastic. I'll see the reviews anyway, and it'll give me some feedback on how I'm going now that we've reached 100 episodes. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the Little Green Cheese podcast. If you want to make cheese and don't know how and want to learn to do it in a structured manner, you can pop over to the Curd Nerd Academy, courses.littlegreenworkshops.com.au. I have two courses available, a beginner's cheesemaking course and a blue cheesemaking course, and I'm working on others. If you want cheesemaking supplies, don't forget to pop over to littlegreenworkshops.com.au. We ship all over the world and have most cheesemaking supplies available for you. Also, if you want to pick up any merch like t-shirts and stickers and cups, pop over to merch.cheeseman.tv and have a look at my lovely range of apparel and goodies that have my merch on it. During this podcast, you heard music by Kevin MacLeod. Thanks for watching, Curd Nerds, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.